Hi everyone. Welcome to a special episode of The Pseudoscientist, replacing your usual weekly dose of The Pseudoscientist. We've been quite busy lately.
Yeah, we have. I'm here as well. You thought it was just a Belinda intro with just her, like I do a lot of the time. But no, I'm here as well. And yeah, we haven't been too regular with the proper shows. At least we've been putting something into the feed. I hope you've been enjoying those episodes. If you thought this was going to be a proper episode, then
sorry,
you have been, I don't know, mistaken.
Yeah. Yeah, so we've been busy. I've been moving house.
That's legitimate.
Yep.
It was quite far away, quite a way away as well.
Yes, it was a big move. So it was the family home, which took a while to pack up. And in fact, we're still not even in the new house because the kitchen isn't finished yet. So, you know, it's just, oh well.
I haven't been moving, but I've been moving my brain, I guess. I've got a thesis due at the end of the month, so I haven't been particularly able to do much other than, I don't know, I recorded a couple of unfiltered thoughts and stuff, but that doesn't take as long as a normal episode, so that was fine. Also, Tom had his Fringe Festival show, so you're probably noticing that he wasn't on a lot of those episodes for a long time because he was planning for that, and then he had to do the show, which went for a couple of weeks, and it was amazing, and I saw it, and I think he's probably coming back for either the Comedy Festival next year or for the Fringe Festival next year, so if you missed out on it, come back and watch that.
I missed out on it. I'm a horrible, horrible person.
Yeah, it was really
but
good.
But also, I was moving house, so.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
It was just bad timing all around.
But, so he hasn't been involved there, and he's still, the reason we're not doing a proper show this week is that, I don't know, I'm still too busy, but also Tom and Sarah and Rachel and I guess Belinda as well are busy, and that's fair enough. So hopefully next week there'll be a proper show. I don't want to promise too much, though. If there isn't one, then there will be an Unfiltered Thoughts. But that's all we can promise for now. Belinda, this episode, the proper meat of this episode is your laboratory recording. I had one a couple of months ago and you did one last month.
Yes.
So what did you talk about?
I talked about one of my science heroes, Ruby Payne Scott, who is an amazing astronomer and woman, and was an astronomer and woman at a very difficult time to be an astronomer and a woman. But you'll hear more of that in the Labora story.
Okay, well, we might as well get to that now.
Next speaker is Belinda Nicholson. Belinda has just completed a Master of Science Physics degree in astronomy at the University of Melbourne and is currently at Swinburne Uni studying the colliding galaxies in faraway and long ago universe. When she's not trying to comprehend the mysteries of space, she's throwing people up in the air and cheerleading or punching things in taekwondo, as well as appearing as a regular panelist and host in the Pseudoscientist podcast. Belinda.
So when I got asked to talk about my scientific hero, the first name that came to my head was Ruby Payne Scott. I'd heard about her because there's an award named after her at the CSIRO, and this award is given to women who have taken maternity leave from their research career, and it's given to them to help them re-establish themselves when they come back and to network and get back into their field. I'd also heard of her because she'd played a pioneering role in radio astronomy, a field that's now massive and crucial to our understanding of the universe. But I didn't quite appreciate just how important her role has been, not only to women in astronomy and physics, but to every working woman in Australia today. And I realised just how lucky I am being a physicist today, and just how many hurdles I didn't have to face because she faced them first. Ruby was born in May 1912 in New South Wales, and at age 16, she was accepted into a science degree at Sydney University. This was despite having a family that was not particularly supportive and a brother that was so jealous of her one day that he took her books and sold them when she was out of the house. Nevertheless, she became the third woman in the history of Sydney University to graduate from a science degree. She graduated with first-class honours in mathematics and science and physics. She then went on to get a Master of Science. When she graduated, there were no jobs for women in physics. She was hired as a physicist at a cancer research centre, which closed down only a few years later. Her only option then was to start teaching at a girls' high school. A year after that, World War II began. She then applied to work at Australian Wireless Amalgamated, which at the time controlled all of Australia's wireless networks. She was hired as a librarian. That, of course, was an appropriate role for a woman. She was not content as a librarian. She soon started editing their journal and conducting research herself, and turned her role as a librarian into that of a full-time physicist. A couple of years later, she applied to the newly formed CSIR, which would later become the CSIRO, to the Department of Radiophysics. She, along with another woman, Joan Freeman, became one of the first women to be hired as a physicist in Australia. This department was created to research radar technology during the war. This was top secret work. They even had a policeman standing outside the office door, and they weren't allowed to talk to anyone outside of the office about their work. And it was really hands-on work. It was quite under-resourced, so to build their antennas, they'd use things like coat hangers and wires and anything they could get their hands on. Quite remarkably, she was paid equally with the male colleagues around her. She was hired in a male role as a physicist. But she still faced some inequalities. For example, women were not permitted to smoke. Men could smoke, women were not. This was going to be discussed at a meeting that Ruby was attending. She decided to rock up smoking a cigarette. Women were also not permitted to wear shorts in summer. They were told that they needed to wear skirts or dresses. Ruby's response to this was, well, this is absurd. We're climbing up ladders, up on aerials every day. I'm not going up on a ladder in a skirt. So she didn't. It was also at this time that Ruby, along with her boss, Joe Pawsey, another great Australian physicist, started pioneering work in radio astronomy. It was through detecting interference in their radar systems that led to the first observations of sunspots and also investigations into the magnetic activity of the sun. One evening, Joe took Ruby out onto the roof of one of the buildings at the University of Sydney and decided to point some antennas to the sky and to see what would happen. They didn't find anything. They didn't have the right antennas and the baselines were wrong. But nonetheless, this sparked the idea of looking at the sky at radio wavelengths. When the war was over, the radio physics department, as it was shut down. There was no more need for radar technology investigations. But thankfully, the government did fund a new radio astronomy group. And immediately, Joe Pawsey, who was the head of this group, appointed Ruby as a full-time permanent research assistant. It was during this time that Ruby contributed to some of the key discoveries about the sun, measuring the sun's temperature to be millions of degrees as opposed to 6,000, as was previously thought. She had the physics knowledge to calculate the magnetic fields of solar flares, and it was her that deduced that the auroras, the northern and southern lights, were caused by charged particles in solar flares that were interacting with the Earth's magnetic field. Her inequality problems were not over. After the war, the CSIRO returned to the old pay system, that is, paying women about two-thirds to three-quarters of what the men were paid. This was thought acceptable because, hey, women aren't the breadwinners, they've got men to take care of them. But Ruby wasn't happy with this. She requested equal pay, and quite unusually, she got it. And she got back pay for all the time that she was underpaid. This sets her almost a decade ahead of her time. It wasn't really until the 50s and 60s that women were really starting to be vocal and equal pay was really becoming a thing. But there was one inequality in the workplace that Ruby could not overcome. A few months before being hired in the new radio astronomy department, Ruby had married a man by the name of Bill Hall. This was a dangerous move for her career-wise, because married women were not allowed to be employed on a full-time basis. they could be employed on a temporary one-year contract if it could be shown that A, no man could do the job, and that the particular woman had specialised skills in that area. This law forbidding women to work full-time would not be overturned for another two decades. Ruby managed to keep her marriage a secret for over 6 years. But when she became pregnant, she couldn't hide it any longer, and so was forced to resign. What's more, she never returned to physics, but instead started teaching. This is sort of the part of the story that I find really interesting and challenging. It was not that she wasn't wanted back. The CSIRO CEO, Fred White, said in a letter that he would be very pleased to have her return to radio physics. So why she didn't return is something that we're not entirely sure on. Physics is hard. We can understand her going, well, this is actually kind of hard. I'd like to go raise a family now. Fair enough. And who knows that maybe if a permanent contract had been available for her, if she hadn't had to suffer the indignity of yearly one-year contracts, that maybe she would have gone back, and who knows what sort of physics would have happened. Nevertheless, despite only working in physics for less than a decade, she still made a huge impact on the field scientifically. Not only that, but she put up with and stood up to the bullshit so that I and other female physicists and astrophysicists since then don't have to. Thanks, Ruby. Well, that's it for this episode. As we said, it was a special one, so that's all you've got. Sorry.
Yeah, and we've only been in the studio for about 5 minutes, so there's no bloopers at the end, and there's no music either, so I don't know why you're expecting bloopers. I don't know. You've listened to enough of these special episodes to know that that wasn't going to happen. But other than that, yep, that's all we have. Now we're just talking to fill the time and make the episodes seem longer.
Yeah.
Because longer episodes make it seem as though, you know, we're good and we've got stuff to say, but really we haven't. And I'm just speaking for no reason into the microphone just to keep things going on. I should probably stop now.
Keep going. No, you can do it.
No, you can keep going. How long do you want me to speak for? Hours?
I don't know.
I could probably speak for 2 hours.
Yeah, you could. Fill out an entire episode with just you.
It may devolve into just groaning and stuff as my vocal cords just like melt into my lungs.
I don't think that's a good medical thing.
It's not a thing. Really.
I don't think that's actually... Well, actually, it might become some kind of weird medical disease where your vocal cords...
If I got a dose of radiation to my throat, it might happen.
Maybe.
I'm not planning to do that in the future, though, so...
Yeah, it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing. Anyway, that's all we've got for you, and we will catch you guys next week. Thank you for listening.
Yes. See ya.